This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work, so I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so then my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker, and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Well, whoops.
Yeah, whoops.
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 Sorry.
Yeah. Brad Rantanen's not fitting it at all in Carolina. A goal and assist in the first 9 minutes of the game. Thanks. Good job. Should have seen that coming. The agent of our demise.
At least
for the one night, anyway.
It's easy to say that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was my process bad for liking him last night? You know, playing better 5-on-5. Is Carolina good? Hartford? Is that the vibe you want if you're trying to win a Stanley Cup is to wear Hartford uniforms? But I don't know. I was the sucker.
Yeah. I do think they're good.
They're good.
I don't know if they're great, but they're definitely I definitely think they're good. I don't know if I said that.
I know, but like a playoff team against a good playoff team will win, you know.
Sure.
Win plenty of times, yeah. And at least, you know, be in the game.
Look competitive, yeah. The game the Sabres won here against them back in January was kind of the same. Just the goaltending was different, I guess. I don't know. I mean, they drubbed the Sabres that day too, but the Sabres got out in front early and just managed to stay in front really all game. And last night it was the opposite. And yeah, just
I really, I really was up for that last night. And it was one of those where I got rewarded by getting home and turning the TV on as the first thing I did. And it was 2-0.
Yeah, tough.
That's 2-0 Whalers.
I was also a little late getting there. I was charged with preparing some dinner last night. So I got home and I was, you know, bumping around the kitchen, and I had my iPad there and I intended to put it on. Like I looked at the time and it was 7:02, and I'm like, okay, I got a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept prepping, doing whatever. And then the next time I looked, it was 7:12. I'm like, oh, idiot, you missed the start of the game. So then I turned it on, and eventually I got to the living room, and then I eventually got to social media. I'm like, oh, there was a fight right off the drop of the puck in this game. I missed that. Oh, let me go back and see what. Oh, I'm sorry I did that. I didn't need to do that. That wasn't good. Oh, poor Dylan Cousins. What happened to Dylan Cousins? I don't know if he ever had a superpower, but if he did, it's been missing. 2 years ago, I think he would have beaten that guy to halfway to Helsinki. Oh my gosh, decline next time. Don't do that. No, bad, Dylan, bad.
Very disappointing. Well. Now it's like back to, it's one game, but your thoughts turn to the deadline again. as opposed to, if you were so inclined, the standings.
Well, 2-1 in this 5-game segment, Mike.
I know.
So the next two are against Montreal. I mean, they get back on track.
No, that's right. That's right. So, one game doesn't ever really change it that much.
Right. Unless it's the very end and you're mathematically eliminated.
But I just wanted a closer game, you know? I wanted to think that the Sabres have grown enough that, but you know, anybody can have a bad night, I guess. Just all that kind of stuff seems like an eye roll, right? With them.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's why, you know, yesterday specifically, I'm like, I'm really struggling with the whole thing, you know, trying to get invested in this. I'm almost always going to watch, but like believing in it in any way really has been challenging for me. It's why I've appreciated where you've been really all week when we've talked about them, because I think it helps us to have that in the room. But boy, yeah, last night was a tough look in the mirror, because they were absolutely outclassed, I think, is the bigger scary thing about it. Like, for all the 5-on-5 play and like they're this and they're that and there's positive signs, I mean, they got smoked, really, is what happened last night.
Well, a team in their position with a couple of at least semi-interesting veteran UFAs to be, it's like a knee-jerk to seller mode. And I think, you know, not that either guy, Zucker and Greenway I'm talking about, would command a huge return, but like those guys get traded in this situation, at least one of them for sure.
Yeah, I think Yoki Haru's on that list too.
Okay,
fine. Yeah. And also same. Like I don't think he would get any kind of great return, but he's someone you could move for pieces if you want to do that.
And shouldn't they? The playoff drought, is what gets in my way when it comes to this stuff. Because, like, it's just been so long, and to churn that again, it's just sort of more of the same. It's familiar. It's kind of a bad taste. But I think that's what you do.
I think you probably, sure, you could make a case to do it with all three guys. And, you know, I don't know, not stop there. Maybe there's hockey trades to be made. J.J. Paterka, welcome to the trade, big boy.
I know. What's that?
Because that's not trading for futures. He's a future. He's
both.
He's kind of like, you know, remember when Darcy used to say, and like lots of GMs have said it, like, I don't want, you know, picks or prospects. I want young NHL players. That's what he is. And I think whether he's still ascending or not, I don't know. I overshot the runway by quite a bit on him. I thought he'd be their best guy by now, and he's not. But I think he's still very good and still pretty young. So that's not a guy I'm eager to move without knowing what the return is, but the return would have to be something comparable, because I'm not interested in even a first-round pick for J.J. Paterka, because he's 23.
I wouldn't be.
And can score. Like, he's a useful player to me. The other guys, you know, the UFAs, I like Greenway and Zucker. I think they're useful. The way I've described Greenway a few times with Paul, I don't know if I've ever said this with you in the room. It feels like whenever he comes up, it has been days where I'm talking to Paul by myself. But he's not like a needle mover player, I think. But what he is to me is, and it's dawned on me last year when for whatever, however many minutes of our lives last season, we thought that they were live. Watching games, he does a bunch of little stuff that I think helps of a good team. But he's not going to make you good. Like, his presence is not going to make you good. But he will do stuff that will help you.
Who is this now?
Greenway.
Okay.
So, like, I have room for him. If you want to tell me they're going to sign him to an extension, I'm not so desperate for whatever the return is going to be that I got to make a move with him. And I would say the same about Zucker. But what I want to know is, how do I have to overpay because I'm Buffalo, right? Because palm trees, because, you know, I can't trade for guys, nobody wants to come here, all that. Like, how much of a tax is there on that? If there is one, I don't know. These guys could love it here for all I know and want to be here. Maybe if they have families, their families like it. I don't know. I just I'm reluctant to just sign off blindly on, yeah, keep them, don't move them, because I don't really have a need for another third-round pick right now, you know, recognizing that could maybe turn into something down the road. But I want to know what the price is going to be.
Well, you know this, of course, but you're accomplishing a couple of things by trading those players. It's not just what you get back, but you're, if you will, dodging the commitment, like the dollars and the years and the roster spot. Like one it wasn't that long ago with them, and maybe now it seems like almost laughable, but like, where are we going to put all these guys? You know, the Kulik group, and you know, you had Benson and you had Savoy there for a minute. Like, if they're all skilled forwards, I can't just have 12. I know, right? I'd be so terrible. But I can't have 12 skilled young forwards, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not building the Four Nations, an NHL version of the Four Nations team. I have to have balance. I have to have vet, you know, age. I have to have different things. So they can't all just play. And so I think Zucker is easy. I mean, he is having a good season. He would be, I think, wanted. And he's at $5 million at 33 years old. I don't know. Like, I don't want to do that for the future, right? Like, he's most of their power play goals, I know, and he's mattered to this team. But going into mid-30s at whatever that's going to cost, I want the space.
Yeah.
I want the flexibility that would give me.
I like that point because I think in that case, even though Zucker has been obviously a more impactful player, he's also been healthier. And right now I'm not a good team, so every little thing that I'm describing here or referring to that Greenway does for you doesn't matter as much because you're in last place. But the guys they've got, what they don't have is a Greenway. Like, he's unique within their forward group and almost within their entire organization. So you should be able to find your way to someone to take Zucker's spot. That's not to downplay what he has had a very good year. To me, a better year than I ever envisioned when they signed him. I mean, he's not an all-star level player or anything, but he's been really nice. But if you're thinking about making room, I should have more of a plug and play ready for him than I do for a guy like Greenway. So if they were to end up trading one of the two, I guess I would be in favor of Zucker being the one that moves and Greenway stays.
Wasn't Travis Yost's point yesterday on Greenway like, fine, sorry that word, but how much better is your team for having him? Like, sort of the ultimate value of the player. And, you know, I accept what you're saying, and also think, though, that Travis might have a good point, because he usually does, right? Like, just what am I getting for whatever that's going to cost? Is that 4 years at $4-5 each, you know?
Probably that ballpark. That's about where he is now, and I doubt he gets, like, he gets his salary cut.
I guess I wouldn't hate it. You know, I wouldn't hate it. It makes sense, but I'm just sort of struggling with, and this has happened so many times with the Sabres, is like, okay, I'm going to do this again. I'm going to sell off.
Right.
I mean, what those two guys, maybe three, have sort of meant on this team this year, I'm going to just do that. But I think it's right to ignore. Well, maybe it isn't. I feel like the right answer lies in not going back in time and basically making your job harder because you're, you know, you realize how long it's been since they've been good. But I think really these are decisions made for the present and the future, not the past. So I know yesterday I was like betting the Sabres and looking for playoffs, and here I am on like the deadline one day later.
Sell it all.
Yeah, sell it all. Everything must go.
Yeah.
What about like Tuck? Travis mentioned him. Is he untouchable?
I don't think anyone really can be, and I guess I have to include Paterka in that too, and Greenway. What, like, and I'm not saying Greenway's untouchable. I'm just making a case for like why I would want to hang on to him if I could, you know, unless I'm blown away by some sort of return that I'm getting. I don't think anyone on that roster should be untouchable.
Yeah.
Dahlin is the one you could maybe make the best case for to me. But even him, like if you came to me with the, like, I don't know what the trade that trade is. I've never wasted a second of my life trying to think one up. But if you came to me and laid out, okay, I guess I'm going to have to sit with that and talk it through. But I wouldn't be eager to do that. I think it's a very hard trade to win. Everybody else to me, yeah, tell me what we're talking about here. As long as it's, if it's younger guys, if it's Tuck under contract, still like relatively prime of his career, okay, what is the return? What am I getting? Because I'm going to create a hole there. And sure, I've got my pipeline here. But again, Tuck is more, he's not a big physical player. But he is big. He has size, and he can use it. He's not like a power forward type, mean, nasty business type dude. But
solid,
yes, built solidly, strong, and I don't have a lot of that. You know, they for a while there were drafting guys like Savoy and Kulik who are, you know, barely 6 feet and not, you know, 190 pounds or even less than that in some cases.
Benson.
So you know, Tuck does serve a purpose. But yeah, even him, like I'm listening to everything. Even Paterka, my boy, Paterka, I love him, but this is so stale or has been for so long that I don't think anything should be like, oh no, we're not doing that.
No, I think that's right.
I would consider anything. And that includes Tuck, even though he's from, you know, the Syracuse area.
Yes. I think I'd just hang up the phone on Dahlin, but maybe no one else. I guess that's probably bad practice. Just listen. But I think, you know, defense, if you're going to make a move with one of these guys, they still really could use one more or two or three good defensemen. I mean, for me, Byram isn't it. And if Yoki Haru is traded, Clifton, really, like it's, I don't know how much it really has changed, but at the present time, it seems pretty thin. So I'd want to do that. I wonder what the plan for Levi is. I mean, he's been excellent,
yeah,
apparently, in Rochester. And they have Lukanen now signed for 5 or so more years.
Right, this was year one of the new contract, I believe.
It goes through 29.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah, good question. I don't know. And Lukanen's had a tough year. I think mostly like he hasn't really had a pocket like he had last year. Really, I think he earned that contract last year from January 1 to the finish line. Like he was really, really good. Like one of the best guys, five on five, expected goals against, all that stuff. He was in the top. Like if they'd been a better team, he might have gotten some dark horse Vezina consideration last year. I think his play warranted that kind of attention, but the team wasn't good enough, and, you know, whatever. But he was that good. And this year, just, it has not happened at all. So, yeah, I
goalies.
And they're coming to a spot with Byram here, too. You just mentioned him. Like, he's RFA again. Not again. I mean, he came here with that status. He was going to walk into RFA. And there have been times, yeah, I even said, I think after the game on Tuesday, I mentioned how he and Dahlin, like I just thought they were controlling the game together. And you said he's lucky to be out there with him. And we were up against a break and I didn't push back on it. And I wanted to. And then last night I watched the game. I'm like, I'm kind of glad I never got to push back on Byram because he was a disaster last night. Like he was at the scene of every crime. And not every one of them ended up being a goal. But he was just, he's had a very rough night, I thought, last night. And I don't know what is he? Like, if he works with Dahlin, do I want to invest in that? Because not just anyone can do what they were doing on Tuesday together. You know, when you said that, I thought, lucky. Like, Matias Samuelsson was lucky to play with Dahlin when he got here, and he got a contract from it. And he hasn't been able to play with Dahlin since. They figured out, like, oh, that was a mistake, I think. Anyway, the way we were talking when he first got here was like, oh, there's your number one pair for 10 years.
That was an interesting bet. You know, the Sabres at that time were making big bets on really young players, you know, and a couple of them were blue chip. And, you know, you had Thompson who emerged, and then that made sense. Samuelsson was the one that was really like, it just looked like more of a gamble. And it doesn't look great.
No, doesn't.
That's five more years at least at
4.2. Byram to me, like that definitely to me, if he had really nice value on the market, I mean, he was traded straight up for Middlestat last year. I might make that same kind of trade again if I could.
For Middlestat. Yeah, both guys, right. You know.
Both guys are in the mills.
It's a hockey trade, but you realize why certain guys do get moved, even when they're young and talented, you know, like this guy, or what Middlestat was, you know. Like, it was a kind of a smart idea, worth doing, but there are reasons why teams are willing to part with certain guys. Like, just the ceiling is not that high, and I think that's that trade. So, okay, not just anybody can play with Dahlin. I'll take my chances on somebody because of the elite player that he is. Kevin Adams has a week. We'll have him on later. Ask him some of this stuff. Next game tomorrow night against the Canadiens. We have guests today. Theo Greminger coming up in about 10 minutes talking about the combine. Sam Panayotovic back from Ireland.
You've been in touch with Sam today at all?
I have.
Okay, me too.
Yeah.
I saw a video. Did he send you a video?
I don't think so.
I saw a video of some people playing in a pub in Ireland.
See?
Not him, but...
You're his audience for that.
Right.
Live music. Right. That goes to Bulldog. Matthew Stafford staying with the Rams and what that means for Puka Nacua. That's the text I get.
Okay, right.
With the arrows pointing up for Puka. One of his ideas for, was it NFL Offensive Player of the Year? Something like that for next year. I think that's the award he was thinking of Puka for. And Sal will join us as well. That'll be at 4:30 today. The franchise tags are out. And running back is 13.6. So, kind of funny, like it's under, talk to Sal about it, it's under Cook's, you know, supposed demand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Bills would want to do that, but...
Well, they don't have to do it now anyway. No. He's under contract another year.
Actually, that's right. So it would be next year. Rousseau would be the one.
Well, no, Rousseau is under contract too, fifth-year option. He's on a guaranteed salary for this year. The motivation with him is if he's here, you probably want to commit long-term and lower that cap number because that's available to you if you want to extend him.
That's right. The list is of guys who are under contract for 1 year, but then what? And that's what they accomplished with Shakir.
Right.
That's Benford.
Benford, right.
Bernard.
Yes.
Two.
That's the group.
That's a pretty good list.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll bring on Theo, talk some Combine. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Thanks for listening, or watching, or both. Hopefully, if you're watching, you're listening too. That'd be great. Back with Theo after this timeout here on WGR.
I've been through 6 different OCs, you know, so I'm able to adjust to any offense and every scheme and make it work. We went from Jackson State to Colorado and changed 2 programs back to back. So you don't think I could come to an NFL franchise and change a program again? It's history. We've done it again. It's always going to repeat itself.
Shedeur Sanders at the Combine will not be throwing. If you went to the Combine, would you throw?
Sure.
Why not, right?
I'm not scared. What do I have to lose?
I think the interesting one of these so far, and there's probably more than one, our next guest will almost surely know, Tet McMillan, the receiver from Arizona, is not running. And that's not a great sign.
Is he almost assured to be the first receiver taken?
I think so.
That's sort of why Sanders and Ward don't throw.
But
you're already telling me I'm going, you know, early as it is. All I can probably do is hurt myself if I am bad. So I'm fine.
So I'm probably bad.
No, I'm probably going to avoid being bad on this day.
Looking bad, yeah.
It could be a bad day to have a bad day, like Andy Reid said earlier this week about the Super Bowl. So
weird for a receiver not to run.
More controlled situation, not unprecedented. Didn't Marvin Harrison
London is one.
Some of the big guys didn't run last year, I think.
Rude of us to not bring Theo in. Theo's over there. Guys, I know the answers to these. Theo Greminger, player profiler. What do we leave out there, Theo, if you happen to have been listening?
No, I think it's an interesting conversation because I think it's getting to be more and more amplified where prospects kind of sit things out. Where years ago, it sort of started with the bowl games years ago. where people are making kind of financial decisions. I don't think that every opt-out of the 40 or opting out of throwing at the combine is necessarily an indictment on the player's skill there. For some of them, it's what do they have to gain? What do they have to lose? For some players where we had maybe big-time question marks about their speed, you could kind of argue that it's a little bit of a red flag. But nowadays we have more and more like miles per hour testing, which is pretty reliable that we're actually getting from collegiate players already heading into it. And then the pro day 40s, you always have like a little bit of distrust about the 40 times at pro days, but they've been getting a little bit tighter with that. It's getting more and more difficult to inflate 40 times and stuff with all the miles per hour technology that we have. So I'm not super worried about it. Like, Shedeur Sanders is not throwing at the combine. Neither did Bryce Young. He went with the first overall pick. I think when it comes to guys like Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, I think they probably have assurances about where they're going to go in the draft with teams sort of banking on them. I thought it was weird today. Cleveland Browns social media did like a post on X talking about like the bright futures of Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. It's like, that's kind of weird. You know, you're sitting at the number 2 overall pick.
Right.
Maybe you're starting the hype train for the fan base. So I don't put as much into it. It's very disappointing, Mike, for us who want to see these guys with like a full numbers, the full picture. We've been waiting on the combine like forever, seemingly. I think it's more frustrating for us than it is the NFL teams. I know our good friend Sigmund Bloom from Football Guys reminded everybody the other day that the most important thing about the combine is the stuff we don't see, the physicals, where the NFL teams are actually going to get real information on these guys, the physicals, all that sort of thing.
Right, and yesterday that was a big story as it pertains to the potential number 1 pick, Abdul Carter. What do you think of that? Mike and I talked about it a little bit yesterday, and I think it could be enough to scare somebody off of it, even if it's given a clean bill now, like he doesn't need the surgery. You're still going into it with the potential for that to become a thing. And, like, I don't know, it's not that convoluted to me to get into the season and, you know, he's on Tennessee, say, first overall, and they're having a bad year and his foot's bothering him, and, like, okay, we'll just shut him down and we'll bring him back next summer. And that's not what you want to do when you're drafting a guy 101, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, you want clear non-red flag issues with the 101. I think, if anything, it puts a little bit more of a conversation at the 101 where Abdul Carter's a freak, and he's a very, very well-respected prospect in terms of both athleticism, on-field production, like, you know, compares to some of the better edge rushers that we've seen over the last 10 years. So I think that the foot injuries definitely something where NFL teams are going to have to make a little bit more of a decision. But I think he's got a very insulated floor just about how far he could fall. Now, does Tennessee take him at the 101? The 101 is interesting. I've done 3 mock drafts so far, and I've had Tennessee taking a quarterback at the 1 spot in every single one. I get that there's better prospects, and I get that not perfect quarterbacks. You guys know the value of a quarterback on a rookie contract in the NFL, and when you're sitting there at the 101 and you have quarterback issues, for me, I think they've got to take a chance and draft one of these guys and just hit. Or potentially a spot where they know they're guaranteed to get another one of these quarterbacks. But I think he's got to walk out of this draft with a quarterback. Just my opinion, I think that when you go into – you have the number 1 pick, and then you end up with some sort of a bridge quarterback, you know, a Justin Fields or a Daniel Jones or whoever, Kirk Cousins, that they would get if they didn't draft one of these guys. You might not ever be back in that situation where you're picking one again and have a chance to get, like, your pick of the litter of the players. So I still am of the opinion that Tennessee is going to take a quarterback, and I think the Carter news probably makes that a little bit better of a bet.
Theo Greminger, our guest on the Western Hotline. You know, Tennessee is especially interesting for what I'm thinking of here in that they drafted Levis in round 2 and before that Malik Willis in round 3, like sort of middling bets on young quarterbacks. I think they could do that again here by the sound of the quarterback class, Theo. Like, you've got those two guys and you're laying out why they could or should take one at the first overall, but they pick early in round two. I think Cleveland goes first. It's a different order, but they pick early in round two. What about those guys that are likely or at least possibly available there? Jackson Dart, Milroe. Is Tennessee sort of, is that a, like a non-starter for them? No pun intended, perhaps, because of their recent past, or is that maybe a good idea?
You kind of made an argument not to do this with the two guys you referenced, where you know it's sort of like they've done it twice, where they've invested that draft capital on a lesser bet quarterback. Neither one worked out. They it's sort of a half measure what they did with those two guys, where neither one worked out. Now it's sort of like a chance to get a premium asset. For me, I would be surprised if they go that route. Dart's an interesting one because I'm projecting him to go inside the first round. I think Jackson Dart has enough juice and enough of a profile and a big arm and some mobility where, Mike, I remember this time last year where we were seeing guys like Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. projected by like the Las Vegas odds. Their over-unders in the first round were somewhere down in the 29, 30, 31 range, yep. Like just teetering on the brink of the second round. And both of those guys end up being selected inside the top 12 overall picks, that sort of range. So for me, I think when it comes to Dart, I don't think he's incredible prospect to some of these guys. And I don't think there's as large of a gap between him and QB2 as I think the market is reflecting now. Looking at like Pittsburgh, you start looking at teams trying to reposition themselves into the back end of the first round. I think there's enough quarterback needy teams that Jackson Dart is going to be an appealing one. So, especially with Matt Stafford now, working everything out with the Rams and sort of that ship is off the table, it's a very thin free agent class at the quarterback position. You have Sam Darnold and then again some of these bridge quarterbacks like Justin Fields, who can kind of fill the gap but aren't necessarily long-term answers. So I think that if Dart does just enough where you can squint and see a potentially effective pro quarterback, that somebody's going to pull the trigger there and take him in the first.
Right, and he, you know, speaking of guys who aren't motivated to throw like Ward and Sanders, Dart's going to throw, Milroe's going to throw, Shug is going to throw. And I wonder, like any of those guys, you already talked about Dart. Mike and I have a bet on Milroe because I'm expecting some team to just fall in love with him after, or maybe a few teams to fall in love with him after he puts on a display. This seems like a ready-made event for a guy with a big arm and who can really run. He'll run a 40. I mean, I don't know about his running, how much that will be on display in this event, but I'm curious about either one of those guys being sort of like you just talked about, Nix and or Penix.
Yeah, so Milroe's the interesting one because it's the old adage that all it takes is one, where he does have some faults, but you reference the speed. This is a player that in an SEC game, in big boy football at the college football level, he hit 22.5 miles per hour. He also beat Georgia as a starting quarterback. So there is some interesting traits to Milroe. Milroe also, participated in the Senior Bowl, had a slow day one, but improved day two, day three. And it's sort of a similar story where, these guys go to the Senior Bowl, they do just enough for some team. I would be willing to bet Milroe's probably a day two selection, though. I don't think that he's one that's going to leap up. There's just some limitations in the passing game with him, and I'm not sure that we're going to get a fourth quarterback inside the first round. For me, I think the bet is Dart. And Dart also, of course, went to the Senior Bowl. Like you said, he's participated in all the drills at the Combine. He also put on a display at the Senior Bowl where he was clearly the best quarterback there. So I think it's sort of been a good offseason for Dart, and it could end up being a much better one if he performs well tomorrow at the Combine.
Theo Greminger, our guest here for a few more minutes. What about Travis Hunter? And we can make this, in part, a fantasy question, Theo. I got to get you at least one. Hunter went from, Heisman Trophy speaks for itself, receiver-corner combo, and in early drafts, and by the way, where we're drafting right now is not that early anymore, Bulldog. These are sort of, it's not mid-season either, but, we're well into the draft season. He was, kind of interesting. And then when it was reported he was going to the Combine to focus on corner, he became less interesting. Now you've got teams talking this week, Theo, and a lot of them see him as wide receiver, even probably the best wide receiver in the class. So what about him, even at the first pick, as an idea, or wherever you might like him more? And then also, like, is he somebody you're betting on, realizing what we don't know yet in terms of fantasy as a receiver?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a sort of a opportunity cost for us in early best balls, Mike, where you get a chance to take a guy who's being priced into being a part-time wideout, who if ends up in the right situation and they use him as a situational corner and a primary wide receiver, then you're holding with sort of Garrett Wilson-like ability, maybe even a little bit more explosive an athlete. And you factor in the fact that did his development at the wide receiver spot be held back significantly by having to play all those snaps at cornerback and be a dominant defensive player? I mean, it sort of has to. So what am I betting on? You know me. I'm always betting on the fantasy football outcome. I hope Travis Hunter never plays a snap of defense in the NFL and we get him for fantasy football, because I think he'd be a very effective player for us. I had a chance to pod with Dwayne McFarland, and in his model, he has Travis Hunter, like, way, way up there historically. The model doesn't account for him possibly playing cornerback. It's just evaluating him as a wide receiver prospect. And he's up there with, like, some of the top names in fantasy over the last 10 years as prospects. So I'm all over Travis Hunter if he does make that switch. Triple team drafts him and says, you know what, he's an every-down wide receiver for us, because I think he's a really, really good talent. I'm sort of hopeful that it's New England that gets him, because I think that Mike Vrabel has the kind of the stones and the personality where he might be sort of somebody who embraces an outlier profile, where he does something where no other NFL team would do. Vrabel was a two-way player himself, obviously on a limited snaps basis. He had 10 catches as a pro, and I think they were all touchdown catches, or 8 for 8, something crazy. So Vrabel's already played both sides of the ball. He's a very aggressive-minded guy. When he was in Tennessee, he said he would do something sort of unthinkable in order to win a Super Bowl. If you know one there. You can Google the quote. And I think Vrabel, if he had that sort of a talent, especially with their limitations they have at wide receiver in New England, maybe we'd see Travis on the field as much as humanly possible with an almost full-time offensive role. I think that's sort of our best bet for fantasy, where you get top five draft capital and a coach who's willing to play him. I think Vrabel's the one.
Theo, on the heels of a season that could be described as a running back renaissance, you've got a draft class here that is just chock full. We've been hearing about this since Halloween. I feel like there's just going to be an incredible bunch of running backs in this draft class. How are you looking at that, and just how high are you on this class of running backs?
I'm ecstatic with this class. I think that this is the best class we've had since 2017, which is sort of the class that everybody points to as to what's possible for us in fantasy football. We had a lower level of talent and draft capital in last year's running back class. It's sort of this year's class is almost two classes together talent-wise, where you have a guy who's like my running back 5 right now, who I think would have graded out higher than Jonathan Brooks, who was the first running back selected last year. You bring up the fact that running back is sort of back in vogue for NFL teams. We saw it with the Jonathan Taylor contract. We saw it with teams like Arizona and New Orleans re-signing their veterans with Kamara and Connor. And, of course, the success of Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, and a ton of guys last year. So it's a copycat league. And high-end running back production Philadelphia does not win a Super Bowl without Saquon Barkley this year, period. And I think that sort of success, coupled with the fact that Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs both really, really hit, is going to potentially create a perfect storm where we could have 3 running backs selected in the first round this year. I really believe that. I think if I was setting the over-under, I'd put the over-under right at 2, because I think that there will be 2 selected. And I think that by the end of the day, there's enough in the quality in like the running backs 2 through 5 and enough teams that I could see making a move to get inside the first round or simply selecting in the last 10 picks in the first round that guys like Omarion Hampton, guys like Travion Henderson, guys like Caleb Johnson, all of the non-Ashton Gentry running backs in that sort of big five are going to be in the mix for the first round. Then on top of that, we get Ashton Gentry, who's sort of a generational prospect. And if you don't think he's a generational prospect, he's at least as good a prospect as Bijan was coming out, where some people are saying this is the best prospect they've seen since Saquon Barkley in the evaluative buildup. And what's interesting is when you look at non-fantasy people but NFL people doing their big boards, Ashton Gentry is viewed as the number one offensive player in this entire draft in terms of just the overall. So that's the guy who we could go see go inside of the top 10 picks. I projected three running backs in my latest mock draft to be selected the first round. I know Mel Kiper also had Omarion Hampton going at 12 overall and talked about how Omarion Hampton is high on a lot of NFL teams' boards and pretty close to Gentry. Hampton's been my RB2 in this class for months now. And there's sort of an argument who's the RB2 in the class. I think we'll know a little bit more after this weekend. But Caleb Johnson, Travion Henderson both have their backers. But with Omarion Hampton, he's got size. He's got athleticism. He's going to weigh 225-plus. He was had over 2,000 scrimmage yards this year for UNC without Drake May. And he's one of only four players in ACC history to have 1,500 rushing yards and 15 rushing touchdowns in back-to-back seasons. The other three players were Dalvin Cook, Lamar Jackson, and Travis Etienne, three guys that have all had big-time fantasy success. So for me, Omarion Hampton, I think, is just tailor-made to be a two-way back in the NFL, and I think after this weekend, I think he'll be a first-round pick. And then Travion Henderson is people chasing the Jahmyr Gibbs player, where there's all this data about how big plays generate points in the NFL. If you have a big play, an explosive play on a drive, I think your chances of scoring like go up like four times. So the Jahmyr Gibbs model is going to help Travion Henderson. Henderson might light up the combine athletically. There's some sort of whispers out there. And I think somebody might pull the trigger on him as like a high-value touch guy, explosive play guy. And Caleb Johnson is another 220-pound back that was extremely productive at Iowa this year. A lot of people are very high on him. And then the guy that we're not projecting to go first round, really be a strong second round pick, Quinshon Judkins, was unbelievable at Ole Miss. And then, of course, everybody saw him have three touchdown runs in the national championship game this year for Ohio State. Unbelievable profile for our running back five. And then we could talk forever, guys, because there's a bunch more running backs in this class that might end up being day two picks and have a lot of fantasy potential. So, yeah, fantasy managers or dynasty managers, this is the year where you want to take running backs. And, Mike, in our early best balls, those rookie running backs are values right now, because I think they're all going to move up in redraft ADP as we get closer to the summer.
Get as many of them as you can. Theo, where is the mock draft that you're talking about? Where can our listeners find it?
PlayerProfiler.com. It's over there for free. You can go read it whenever you want. And then I'm going to do an update this week. There's a couple guys that I think I'm going to have to move up, especially the defensive line after the numbers we saw yesterday. Guys like, you know, James Pierce and Stewart, Derek Harmon. A couple of these guys had very, very strong performances in Indianapolis. I think they've sort of cemented themselves in. So I'll do an update. I'm going to continue doing these mock drafts. Then I'm also doing fantasy rookie ranking updates. I'll have those at Player Profiler and Fantasy Points. And then I did a way too early top 25, Mike, for redraft at Fantasy Points. And I'm doing an update that's going to be a top 50. That should be coming out really soon. That's something that I put a lot of work into. And there will be a couple of non-Ashton Gentry rookies inside of my redraft top 50 overall. A number of those running backs, and also Tet McMillan will be in there.
Thank you, Theo. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Theo Greminger at VOG Fantasy, which is also TheoG Fantasy, depending on your mood. You can look at that if you're him.
It works either way.
It's my name, or, you know, like I'm the man. Whatever. It does work either way. We will have Sam Paniatovich and Sal Capaccio along next hour. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back. We'll have to keep this short as we just got done with a lengthy conversation with draft analyst Theo Greminger. We have a 4.29 at the combine, a DB named Hairston from Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
You want speed for the Bills, you just might have to get it in the secondary.
Right.
There's a lot of speed on the field right now.
That can serve a purpose, too, even if you're not a two-way player like Travis Hunter. But, yeah. Who? One of the Texas guys today, was it Bond or Bond was talking about setting a new record?
Well, it was actually him and Jaden Blue, running back. So
okay.
But he was
also
Isaiah
Bond. But I saw Isaiah Bond say, hey, I expect to run in the 4.2s or a 4.1.
He mentioned a 4.1, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm not saying it can't be done, but wow.
I'm going to say it.
Can't be done?
Yep.
4.1?
I'm saying it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They do keep getting faster, though.
Mm-hmm.
What did Travis tweet recently about, as I said, I was going to keep this short, but a half marathon runner
under an hour? I was on that. He ran 13 consecutive 4-minute miles or sub-4 minute, whatever. It was preposterous. I could go find it in my Twitter feed. But, yeah, it was a new record for a half marathon. The guy ran around 4-minute miles 13 times in a row.
Not bad.
My God.
I've never done it.
Whew.
Sam Paniadovich has never done it. He will join us after sports here on WGR.